Hello there. You are listening to the voice of Yelena Adzik from Toronto, Canada, and I am the fortunate soul who gets to turn the tables on Tom Evans and interview him for his podcast. Tom, I am so excited to get to be you for a day and actually get to speak with you and ask questions of you instead of you asking questions. Are you ready for this, Tom?
Yeah, I've done it a few times. I want to do it more often if possible, but it's a joy and a pleasure to have someone else taking over the reins of the Zone Show.
Well, I have to tell you, Tom, that I was excited to do this because so often in my role as an arts and entertainment reporter, I interview authors. And so it is an absolute joy of mine to get to read the books in the first place. And, you know, in my hands, I am holding one of your oldies but goodies, The Authority Guide to Practical Mindfulness. And this is what we're used to seeing when we think of Tom Evans. This is a book that's instructional by nature. It's got a lot of great tips and advice. And of course, it is nonfiction. So my first question to you, as we talk about this work of fiction called Soul Wave, why did you decide to do this route instead?
Well, I don't think authors decide. I think our strings are being pulled and decisions are being made for us. And this book started before I'd written any of my 16 nonfiction books. So I started writing it then. I had this idea that it'd be good to explain all the very complex books I'd been reading, but make them accessible in a kind of romp, in a kind of story that made it easy for people to understand. And, you know, on this planet of ours, we're always looking down. Nowadays, people are looking down at their devices all the time. Nobody's looking up at the cosmos. Nobody's looking at the stars. No one's aware that time is really governed by the rotation of the moon around the Earth and its axis, and the Earth rotating around the sun. So I kind of wanted to put all of these themes into one fictional book. And it's pretty much there now. I've just put the final chapters together, and now I'm going to go into production and start producing the audiobook, which is what I do all the time. So basically, the book came to me. It's what you call channel fiction as well. It's a future history. It talks about, starts in 2059, and actually it's a story of hope, but it does involve all life on Earth being obliterated at the same time.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot. I was really attracted to the idea of the reversal of order, because you start out by, well, essentially what we're kind of going through is a countdown. I have been fortunate enough to get to read the first few chapters. So can you share with us a little bit about how you structured it? Because it is quite different from other books in that way.
Yeah, so it finishes in 2109, and that's when this cataclysmic event hits the Earth. They've happened before, and the point of the book is they will happen again and again. This one is going to happen in less than 100 years' time. Obviously, it's fiction, it's not real. And the point of the book is to get people to look up and to really appreciate how special it is to be on this amazing planet, and to get on a bit better while we're here. This is a spaceship. We're all sharing this ride on the spaceship Earth together. So let's get on while we're doing this. Let's stop fighting and bickering and all that sort of stuff. So that's the point of the book. So yeah, and it's written, it's called Soul Wave, A Future History. So it's written in the past tense, even though it's about future events. So this
yes.
happened, then that happened. So it's written as from the point of view of someone maybe in 2109 looking back at events. But it starts 150 years before the end of the book, because also I want to explain about light passing through the universe and how if an event somewhere in the cosmos could happen to take us out and affect life on Earth, it's actually happened X number of light years away. So it starts off saying this is 1959 and this thing happened 150 light years away. And obviously that event doesn't hit us until 2109, 150 years later.
So that's an example of a soul wave. If you had to give us a definition, though, of soul waves in general, what would you say they would be?
On a real basic level, you yes. and I were connected by soul waves.
Okay.
So you heard some of my meditations on Insight Timer, and yep. Something in you, it wasn't in your head, it was somewhere down in your heart, and it said, I've got to reach out and connect with this man.
Yes.
Yes. You'd already made the connection by listening to the meditation, but you looked me up on the internet, you sent me an email, we chatted, and our hearts are forever bonded together right across space and time. That's a real practical example of a sol wave. Sol waves exist between the sun and the earth. So sol waves keep the earth rotating around the sun. The earth rotates around the sun because it loves to, and the sun provides us the warmth because it loves the earth, and we have that same, the earth has the same relationship with the moon. So gravity and sol waves are the same. When two people fall in love, their sol waves are intertwining. And this theme is kind of extended out through the book. So there's a kind of love story that runs through the book between a Chinese girl and a dolphin, but that's just another layer of the book.
Actually, I'm glad that you brought up dolphins because they do hold a special place in this book. So I'm wondering if they hold a special place in your heart.
Oh, I love dolphins and whales and cetaceans as well. And there's a theory.
What is it about them?
Well, I think they're more intelligent than us, quite frankly. They just have a different level of intelligence. And it's thought that they're the gatekeepers. They hold the intelligence of the planet together. And I kind of bring that out in the book as well. So I've taken all my weird and wacky theories that I read in books that I couldn't put into nonfiction books, and I've shoehorned them all into this 150-year-long story.
Tom, am I allowed to share a few of the futuristic, not necessarily plot points, but concepts or ideas? I don't want to have spoiler alerts, but some of these are really cool. Can I
share
a few of them?
Let's go for it. Yeah.
So just on a very basic level, you know, you picked up on the sharing economy and you've taken that to the next level where, you know, people don't use fossil fuels anymore and they really, everything is shared. No planes are flying. There's land travel by something called a maglev, but then if you go across water, you go in tubeways. The pollution has cleared. There's weather manipulation. And this one in particular caught my eyes and my ears, 3D printing of long-lasting bones. Or, for example, maybe working ears that would be created for the deaf. If you think about eyes that could be printed, but not just eyes that would help people who are blind to see, but actually zoom in and see even better. So you've really amplified a lot of what we are seeing in technology right now, but taking it to that next level. And I'm wondering, where do you come up with these ideas? They really do seem very futuristic, but also possibly very realistic too.
Well, they are. A lot of those things I wrote about in 2005 when I wrote the first draft. And then 14 years later, we got Elon Musk doing the Hyperloop.
That's right.
That sort of stuff. So a lot of the stuff that I picked up on, and I'm not alone in this. Many science fiction writers, H.G. Wells, Jules Verne, Kurt Vonnegut. One of the things I think a science fiction writer does is tune into the future. And in my other work as a meditation guide and insight timer, I help people, and when I'm helping other writers, I help people channel. This channeling just means it's not about talking to the dear departed or the angels or archangels. It's getting your consciousness out of the way and allowing the collective consciousness to come through. And one of the tricks I teach writers is how to channel their future self, who knows the words they haven't written yet. So perhaps it's Tom in 2019 that was sending those messages back to Tom in 2019.
Right.
And at the same time, Tom in 2019 is aware of what Elon Musk is doing, aware of what some of these amazing surgeons are doing with 3D printing. And that's all it is, that, you know, we used to be able to pick up memories from the past, but I believe that we're equally able, especially when we're in the meditative state, to tune into future memories, especially when they're our own memories, because we're attuned to that. Our DNA is tuned to our own DNA, you know what I mean?
So then, Tom, you dance with this a little bit in the book, but based on what you just said of this idea that we could tap into something that's going to happen in the future, how does that possibly work with or correlate with the idea of free will? That is something you brought up in the book, soul waves versus free will. Can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that?
I do. Well, I think there's a great paradox of being, in the book I call this the density. We're in the density, but we were distilled from the void. And we've got some characters in the void, these counselors that are sort of pulling strings down in the density, but they can't influence directly. They have to influence us through soul waves. And so there's a paradox of being in 3D with a forward arrow of time, is that we got the free will to do everything, but everything is also preordained.
Oh, my brain hurts.
And that's a paradox that you can't see when you're stuck in 3D. It's a bit like if you're in 2D, you can't imagine that there's an up. But once you imagine there's more dimensions than the three that we're inhabiting with our forward arrow of time, then the paradox is is resolved. And I guess one way of seeing it is that you got the free will to go the wrong way. And if I'm coaching someone privately, if someone goes off the rails slightly, all that's happened is they've gone off their preordained path, and they've used free will to get off of it, but they can also use free will to get back on it again, if you know what I mean. And when life's going swimmingly, it means that you're in more of the preordained route. And then sometimes we use our free will because we want to experiment and go off path just to see what is on the edges. So that's kind of all it is, really.
So that's interesting. So you would say that when things seem to be going smoothly for you, that that's your home turf. That's where you're in your zone that was predestined for you. But it seems like all the excitement is out in the unknown and outside of that comfort zone. So where do we want to be? Do we want to be in that comfort zone, or do we want to be out of it?
Well, what is, I don't think it's an either or. I think it's an and both.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know, you could oscillate in and out of the preordained path just to see what's just around the edges. But life's kind of easier when you sit on it. And a good example of that preordained path, I had no idea I was going to be an author. That just kind of happened. I had no idea I was going to be a meditation guide. That just happened. And since I've just accepted that role now, and I've jumped out of being this broadcast TV engineer, I found that this new path is easy and effortless. And the information that I need to write about seems just to pop in.
When you have certain turn of phrase that takes place in the book, does that also just come to you really naturally, or do you work at it? I'll give you an example, Tom. There's one way that you, for example, describe the light of the moon. Mm-hmm. And you talked about a character looking out on the metropolis. And it just says that it was bathed in the ethereal non-light of the moon. And I thought that was such an incredible way to describe the light, as to call it a non-light, because for any of us who, you know, really looked at moonlight, it's got that kind of otherworldly quality that just is not, it's just its own type of entity. It has nothing to do with the sun, even though obviously it's the light bouncing off the sun, off the moon from the sun. So I love your turn of phrase there. And I'm wondering if that comes really naturally to you, or do you kind of work a little bit at it?
Well, I'd forgotten I'd written that sentence until you just said it just then.
Okay.
So it just comes in. And obviously what I'm doing by using that hyphenated phrase, non-light, is just explaining to people that perhaps don't know this, light doesn't come from the moon. It's reflected off the moon's surface, sunlight that's reflected off that. So it is a light, but it's a non-light at the same time. But
yes,
I do like playing with words as well. So there's loads of made up words in the book, and there's hyphens where you wouldn't normally put a hyphen, and that kind of stuff. So
let's quickly talk about orreries then. Am I even saying it correctly? Orreries?
Orreries. That's a real word. That's a real word. That's a mechanical solar system.
So when you, but 3D orreries is definitely made.
Yeah, and now you know what? There are loads of templates out there for 3D orreries, funnily enough.
But, oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. There weren't when I started writing the book.
Yeah, so you're prescient once again. Okay, let's talk about
pre-science. Prescience is pre hyphen science as well.
I love that. Yes, of course it is. Oh, Tom, that's so great. You do have a lot of fun with words, and you also have a lot of fun with time and space, literally location. I wanted to talk a little bit about one aspect of your characters, a few of them anyway. They have the ability to bilocate, so they can be in two different locations at once, by location. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that has been in a lot of different science fiction novels. And I think people are fascinated by this concept. But why do you think we are so fascinated by the idea of being in two places at once?
Well, I think it's in our zeitgeist. I think these are all things that we could do. Now, with the Zone show, funnily enough, I've actually interviewed somebody who did this as a child. So I picked that up from her, a lady called Christine Miller. I've levitated once by accident, and I've interviewed two other people on the Zone show who've also levitated. So we know these things might be kind of fanciful, but they're also possible. But as a scientist, I'm also interested in understanding how it might even be possible to do. I think the example of bilocation you mentioned, a lot of kids can do this, then they forget as they densify in the density, they forget about this. A lot of children can see auras naturally and they lose that ability. You hold a baby up, they're looking all around your face. They're seeing the aura around you. And as then we densify, we lose that ability. And later in life, you can learn to tune into the aura again. I've done it myself and I've taught some other people. I know other people that can do it. And so these things are, these are kind of fanciful things. I wouldn't want to write a non-fiction book about it, but I'm having loads of fun writing about it in a fictional manner.
Wow. Well, I have to tell you, Tom, that because I read your book, or the first few chapters anyway, it spurred a question in my mind that I wanted to put to a little boy, and he's around 5 years old. And so I said to him, what are your earliest memories? You know, do you remember possibly being a baby or being inside me, inside my body? And he said, I don't really remember much, but in all seriousness, he said, but I really do remember having the feeling that I was going to go to a nice family.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And that was everything to me. I thought, what a beautiful thing to say. And also, you know, when children sometimes they say something that feels so natural that you know they're not putting on airs, they're not thinking mm-hmm. of something to entertain you. And so I just felt like your book and reading it opened up a lot of new ways of thinking that were exciting for me. So thank you for that.
Oh, it's great. What a joyful thing for your boy to say. He's a very advanced soul, I can tell.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I'm sure that everyone else out there can't wait to read Soul Wave as well. I wish you all the best with this book.
Yes, I've just finished the first draft now, going to audio production, and it'll be out by the end of the year.
Perfect. We'll watch for it, Tom. Thank you for letting me host today.
Pleasure. Come back soon.
Bye.
Big thanks to you, Yelena, for turning the tables on me so professionally there. Keep an eye on my website, www.tomevans.co, for when Soul Wave will be available. Probably be available in audiobook and ebook by June this year, and I'm hoping to get the print version out by September.